time to look behind the medical headlines with Ask the Pharmacist, and the pharmacist is Elizabeth Roddick. Hello.
Hello, Simon.
Joining us from New Life Pharmacy and making it all the way in your nice new shiny car.
We won't go into that.
Right, now, we did talk about this a few weeks ago, but we thought we'd have another go at it because it's something that affects many, many people. Let's talk about hay fever and go over some points. So what actually is hay fever?
Well, funnily enough, it's not as a result of hay, but a reaction to pollen. And pollens are the male reproductive part of plants and trees that fertilise other plants of the same species. They're small grains which contain a large number of allergic proteins, and they're invisible to the naked eye. If a person is already sensitised to a pollen, then when it's inhaled into the lungs or through the nose or eyes, then that's when an allergic reaction occurs, and it's an explosion, if you like, a release of lots of chemicals.
Now, I didn't realise this until a few years ago, but there's more than one type of pollen, isn't there?
Yeah, grass pollen tends to be between April and August, with peak times end of May to July, about now. Tree pollen can start early March and can continue right through the summer. And of course, levels also depend on the weather and where you live. Grass pollen is certainly the most prevalent in the UK.
Now, it seems to be on an increase. Do we know why?
There's lots of reasons, Simon. Mainly theories. For example, are we too clean? What about hygiene? Lack of exposure to infectious agents such as microorganisms, parasites that grow quite happily in our bodies seems to result in a dampening down of the natural development of the immune system, particularly in the early years. Now, pollution, we've heard all about vehicle fumes, that seems to trap pollen at ground level.
It's the diesel, isn't it?
Yep, and yeah. That's not being dispersed, if it's trapping the pollen there. Overuse of antibiotics, we've talked about that again. They can wipe out good bacteria in the gut and have an impact on the immune system. And generally, climate change, which of course we're all talking about just now, warmer, wetter weather, that can mean the hay fever season is prolonged. We're also seeing a greater variety of plants, new species coming to the UK, which could be causing problems. And lastly, the public being more aware and getting diagnosed and treated more quickly is a good thing, but it also looks as if it's becoming more prevalent for that reason alone.
So what are the main symptoms then?
I'm sure anyone who's had a fever will recognise the sneezing, runny nose. Also the converse, a congested nose, a stuffy nose, itching of the eyes, nose and back of the throat, and a dark appearance under the eyes, and that's due to inflammation of the sinuses. Quite often people cough, loss of sense of smell, taste, tiredness, headache, and asthma may become worse. Generally, hay fever sufferers can feel miserable. And of course, at this time of the year, we've got young people sitting exams. Obviously, getting to your work and even enjoying a normal social life can really be affected by it.
See, I think I have a degree of this, but I've never ever been diagnosed with it. But each year I do, I mean, like today, something like all of a sudden I can feel like I've got a cold.
Yeah.
Out from mm-hmm. nowhere, all of a sudden.
Yeah, I find a lot of people come in to me and say, is it possible for me to have hay fever at this grand old age? And yes, it is.
Can I just say it?
I'm not talking about you, of course.
we'll edit that out. So, what can we do about it then? Because there's some things that we can do to make it a little bit easier on ourselves, can't we?
Yeah, I think prevention is important, Simon. Keeping your windows closed early morning, late afternoon when the pollen tends to rise. And during the pollen season, if you're travelling in a car, keep the windows shut. And you can fit an effective pollen filter in the car. Avoid mowing the lawn. I've heard that's a bit of an excuse for some people. Wearing sunglasses to help prevent eye irritation. And just think about when you come in from outside out. I say to people, is it possible for you to get changed downstairs, maybe have a shower, and remember pets as well? Because, of course, you're bringing that pollen into the house. You're maybe bringing it into the lounge in the bedroom. And try, drying your washing indoors. That's another thing. And choose plants that are insect pollinated. And things that make your symptoms worse, avoid them, such as smoke and other forms of air pollution. And really, Vaseline is another thing at the base of your nose that can stop the pollen going into the body that way.
Now, that's some tips. What about medication then?
The mainstay is, of course, antihistamines, and the one-a-day non-drowsy, they're the most popular ones. But, of course, there is always a slight chance they can cause drowsiness, although it's very rare. You've then got to look at the specific symptoms. For example, rhinitis, a runny nose, or with congestion. I'm not sure if people realise that if these specific symptoms are not treated, then that can lead to asthma, which of course can lead to serious breathing problems. I always recommend, as well as an antihistamine, to use a nasal spray if you find your nose is being affected. And there's lots of different types on the market. Your pharmacist can advise which one is suitable for you. Eye problems, itchy, streaming eyes, use a product called sodium chromoglycate. This can stabilise something called mast cells. Sodium chromoglycate.
Okay.
This can stabilise something called mast cells, stops them releasing the chemicals that cause the allergic reaction. You do have to use them 4 times a day regularly, but it's well worth doing if you've got eye symptoms.
Right, a good comprehensive coverage of that. And if you have any questions, obviously you can get in touch with Elizabeth. We'll give you contacts at the end. Now, another subject that's been in the headlines recently is Parkinson's disease. Now, what exactly is that?
It's a progressive neurodegenerative condition. And what's happening in the brain is the reduction of dopamine producing cells. The area of the brain most affected is something called the substantia nigra, and it's the second most common disease of that type after Alzheimer's.
Do we know what causes it?
Not really. We do know that there are genetic and environmental links, but we're really baffled as to why one person gets it and somebody doesn't. We do know, however, that the age is the single biggest factor, and most people are over 60 when they develop it. And interestingly also, men are 1.5 times more likely than women to be affected.
I had a friend that was like that, and I hadn't seen him for about 6 months, and I'd heard that they got Parkinson's disease.
He's diagnosed.
Yeah, and the next time I met them, I was like, wow, a big difference. I mean, it seemed to be really quick, the way the symptoms had come on. And talking to the symptoms, I mean, the main symptoms we think of is a tremor, but that isn't the only one, is it?
No, there are some drugs that, in fact, cause that tremor. So obviously you may be on something that's causing it. And also there's an essential tremor which can occur in older age, which is really nothing to do with Parkinson's.
Right, and I've jumped the gun there. I mean, how is it actually diagnosed as Parkinson's?
Yeah, it's usually done by a specialist in Parkinson's disease. So you will be referred to a specialist. Various scans of the brain can help with CT scans, MRI, that's magnetic resonance imaging. DAT scan, that detects the loss of dopamine producing cells in the brain I've talked about. And finally, a PET scan, that may be used. So really, you're generally, if your GP suspects it, he or she will refer to a consultant. And as I say, you may go through these scans.
And again, what are the main symptoms?
Well, symptoms can occur very gradually, almost unnoticed. But the ones that tend to result in people coming forward to be checked are tremor, as I mentioned, a rigidity and stiffness. So when someone tries to initiate a movement like walking, there's slowness starting to move and sometimes a type of shuffling walk. They can also be involuntary movements. A person's muscles contract without any control. And depression, that's a very common symptom. Sleep disturbance, swallowing difficulties. And that's why we as pharmacists have to help with that. If someone begins to have these problems, we can maybe help with the medication side, the form of medication.
What are the main treatments then?
Well, what the experts try to do is to control symptoms and improve quality of life. The drugs used are to improve these dopamine levels and also reduce some of the particular symptoms which are affecting the person's life. It's important to take the medicines regularly that you're given at the right time. I mean, for example, many should be taken with or after food. That's important. At the same time as medication, patients are encouraged to take regular exercise. And about 2.5 hours of exercise per week can reduce the progression of the disease, as well as helping to produce a feeling of well-being. Now, some patients are also offered speech and language therapy as well if they're affected. Sometimes advice is given regarding protein. That's an interesting one, and an interaction with levodopa. It's something that's taken into consideration perhaps by your specialist. They may advise you to restrict protein in the evening, but that would be a specialist thing and perhaps from your specialist giving you that advice.
And I was hearing that some of the local Parkinson's charities around here have actually been using music and dance to great effect as well.
Well, I think if you think about Alzheimer's as well, that's what we're trying to do. We're using things like that. And I don't know if you noticed in the press recently, Simon, about deep brain stimulation. And that's a really new idea, and we're waiting any positive outcomes from ongoing trials. So we're all the time thinking about new ways of treating this disease because it's quite devastating for people.
Yeah, and you're saying that taking the medicines at the right times, and it's not always easy to keep track of these things. If you're living with Parkinson's, sometimes you can get a bit confused and things. So it does pay. You get your own knack of how to know when to take your medicines and remind yourself to do that as well. Now, you might be tempted to think, well, I could take something that's natural or over-the-counter, but are there any things that actually are harmful to you if you've got Parkinson's?
Yeah, it's very important to ask your pharmacist if you're thinking of taking particular medicines. If you take something like a cold remedy, pseudoephedrine, that's in many over-the-counter medicines. Now, this reacts with Parkinson's medicine called selegiline. Saline drops and menthol inhalations are safe. Another one is taking something for travel sickness. You may have heard of Stugeron, for example, which is very effective, particularly for seasickness. Now, that shouldn't be taken by Parkinson's disease patients because it can actually worsen the symptoms. Now, a product containing hyoscine, for example, is safe. Please ask your pharmacist because that's really important. They will, if you go to the same pharmacist, they will know exactly what medicine you're on and they will be able to advise you very carefully and safely.
And if you're with somebody, you're travelling, and somebody says, well, just take these work really well, don't do that. Yeah,
yeah, I've been there, had it. Yeah, lots of people say, well, you see, I tried my neighbour's such and such, and you go, oh dear.
And it'd only been in the cabinet since 1969. Right, let's have a look at a final headline, if you would. A form of dementia that mimics Alzheimer's symptoms discovered.
Yeah, it was a great collaboration of researchers. 22 universities from all over the world, and they published a report describing the main effects of the disease on the brain, diagnosing it and what's known about the clinical effects, what about the effect on public health, and to look at the priorities for research in the future. They looked at the difference between late and other types of dementia. Although the symptoms seem to be the same, things we recognise, such as memory loss, the speed we think, mental sharpness or judgment, mood, movement, just generally carrying out daily difficulties. There seems to be a difference between this late dementia we're looking at. The problem is the only way you can diagnose it is, in fact, looking at their brains, so it says in the autopsy. But the point is that if they do discover there's a difference between different types of Alzheimer's, then the idea is that maybe we can get more targeted drugs, we can maybe solve this in the future, get the right treatment for people. We do, however, know that if you increase your exercise and have a good healthy diet, that can go some way to preventing the disease. So you keep getting that message out there, just keep moving.
I still personally think that there's something, there's a key, because I think growing up, I still think dementia is much more prevalent than it was a few years ago, and I think there's something we're missing still, I think, but time will tell on that, and I'm not an expert like you. So now, if you've got any questions on anything we've chatted about here, if it's affected you in any way or you're not sure about something, you can contact me here and I can put you in touch with Elizabeth. Or you can go to the New Life Pharmacy website and get in touch. Or you can even phone Elizabeth.
Yeah, 01416376000. www.newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
And we'll just have the phone number again.
01416376000.
There you go. That's great. It's just
I even know it off by heart.
Anyway, thank you very much for coming in to see us again.
Thanks very much, Simon.